Alright, don't really have a lot to cover today, but we have limited time, so I want to start on time so I can get done and we can be ready for the test.
Alright, so left off last class talking about the makeup of the general court. We have the Senate, we have the House of Representatives. As we said on Tuesday, there are 40 members of the Senate. There have always been 40 members of the Senate. As far as partisanship makeup, the Democrats have a supermajority in the Senate. I think, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure in the current general court, I think there are 35 Democrats and 5 Republicans. So obviously that pretty much means, you know, one party controls that chamber. As far as the House of Representatives goes, the partisanship makeup is the same. I think there are maybe 30 Republicans out of the 160. Might be like 28, it might be 32, I'm not exactly sure. I honestly stopped keeping count because it's so lopsided, it really doesn't matter. But obviously that means that, as we said last class, if the governor was ever to veto a bill, you know, and it was something that the Democrat Party wanted, that law, they could easily override the governor's veto. And I did give you the example how they even did it to a former Democrat governor, Deval Patrick, who was governor from 2006 to 2010? 14, wait, no, sorry. 14 was when Baker won, so he must have been 2006 to 2014. All right, 2-year terms today. Originally was 1 year, we know that. And there are no term limits. There are no term limits. So we have some members of both chambers in our state legislature that have been there for decades. Now, we'll talk about elections for the next exam, but generally speaking, the founding fathers, the reason why they gave 1-year terms is they wanted frequent elections. And again, we know one of the duties of the citizens is we're supposed to be mindful, paying attention to what they're doing, and if we don't like what they're doing, we're supposed to remove them, send it back to private life. That's what the Constitution says. But unfortunately, in this day and age, people are really not informed, and if they vote, they have a tendency to only vote for the party that they've always voted for. So they don't look at the man or the woman. They don't look at what they've done. It's like, oh, I'm a Democrat, so I'm going to vote Democrat. Or I'm a Republican, I'm going to vote Republican. It's kind of frustrating. Kind of frustrating. Because, again, when John Adams made this system and he put all those duties and rights and responsibilities, those messages to us, he kind of strongly implied that we as citizens should be informed. We should be paying attention. It's our government, after all. But unfortunately, we don't. And again, I can't fault people because we have busy lives. You know, if you have a family and you have jobs and you have to pay your bills and, you know, most people don't have the hours of free time to sit on their butt and paying attention to what's going on in the state or their town or the nation. So it's tough. It's tough. But ultimately, it is what it is. So I'm not saying it's a good thing, not saying a bad thing. It just is what it is. All right, do I got any other little notes in here or anything that I would want to share? Any nuggets? I told you roughly what the size of the districts was. I remember that. And, yeah, I think that's it. All right, and one other thing, don't forget. Originally, to be a senator, you had land, you had age, basically the qualifications to be a voter, but you also had to live in the district. 5 years for the Senate, 1 year for the House. That is still true. That is still true. Ironically, one last little tangential side note. When I was younger, back in 2014, I attempted to run for the House of Representatives. And the Republican Party moved a kid into the district. And they timed the period when they moved him in so that way when the term began, he would be there for a year. He actually came from the district next door. So, and I know the Democrats do the same thing. So the parties themselves, they do play games. They do try to manipulate things. Because ultimately the parties want to control those seats. So the challenge isn't on us, we the people, to pay attention and do something about it. Because we can affect change. We do have that ability. All right. So elections are in November. But each session of the general court starts the following January, on the first Wednesday in January. So this year is an even year, so there will be a state election. Of course, it goes along with congressional elections. And the magic day is November 3rd, that's the election day. So after the election day, it's the first Wednesday of the new year. So the new session for the next, the first day of the next session of the general court's January 6th, 2027. You don't need to remember that, but if you can just kind of remember that, that would be great. All right. We know 2-year terms. We talked about that. But what they do is they mark that 2-year period into 2 separate sessions. Of course, a calendar year. They do that just to keep the calendar, to keep track of the movement of bills. Now, one of the weird things is that it says in the Constitution that the general court can suspend the jet. That really annoys me when I hear class. Thin walls. All right. It says in the Constitution that each chamber has a right to suspend their sessions, because the idea previously, before the advent of like internal heating systems and air conditioning, and the fact that most of the people that used to be in the legislature had their own businesses and farms, the idea was is they would come in and they would work for a few months, and then they'd go home. Well, in this modern era, our legislative bodies do not suspend their sessions. They are in operation every single day except for holidays. As I said, we are one of the few states that have a full-time legislature. So what does that mean? Well, if you are a skeptic, that means our general court is always engaged in shenanigans. Now, there is one catch. As it states in the Constitution, while the chamber can be in session, they cannot vote on any legislation unless a quorum is present. Has anyone ever heard or seen that word before? Your mom sent me a text asking me first. Has anyone ever seen the word quorum before? Quorum is a word that refers to the required number to take action. So on my board, we're a 5-member board, my select board. Our rules of quorum says there has to be at least 3 members present to vote. So we can have a meeting with 2, but we can't do anything. But if we're going to vote on something, there has to be a quorum. It has to be 3. Well, the quorum rules applies to both chambers. They can be in session. They can have the hearings. They can be working in their offices. But if they're going to go to the chamber floor and they're going to vote on any measure, there has to be a majority present. Majority of the body. Majority in the Senate, 21. Majority in the House, 81. If there is no quorum, cannot vote. Now, if for some reason they do recess, you know, every now and then they'll take the last 2 weeks of the year off. You know, because God forbid our paid representatives actually work, you know, in between Christmas and New Year's. But if they do recess and there's an emergency, they do have the ability to call themselves back together for special sessions. But again, seeing how they never take time off other than around holidays, you know, those are very rare in Massachusetts. Other states, by the way, most states only have part-time legislatures. So they'll only go and work for like 3 months out of the year. Of course, they don't get paid full-time either. It's a part-time gig. So if their session runs from, say, April to August, but then something happens in December, they have the ability to call a special session. It just doesn't happen in Massachusetts. All right, questions? Okay, officers. Now, both chambers do have officers. These are the people tasked with running the chamber's business. There's a leadership team in the Senate. There's a leadership team in the House. We know, because we talked about it, Constitution labels the leader in the Senate as the Senate president. And the Constitution labels the leader in the House as the Speaker. Now, there is no rule in terms of partisanship. But if the members of the body only think about the party, chances are it's going to be the majority party who picks one of their own to be the leader. Right? There's nothing saying a Democrat couldn't vote for a Republican or a Republican couldn't vote for a Democrat, but they just don't. They don't anymore. All right. On the Senate side, the current Senate president, I don't have any of the updated names, so I'm not going to bother. The current leader is the Senate president, woman Karen Spilka. That's her name. Karen Spilka. Interestingly enough, last semester when I taught this class, I actually had a student in the class that was the babysitter of her kids. I thought that was really odd. What are the chances? She's a Democrat from maybe Bolton? Actually, I don't know where she lives, so I'm not even going to suggest any of the towns. She was chosen by her party to be the leadership, to be the head leader. And her job is basically to preside. So when the chamber is in session, she's up at the front, and her job is to make sure that discussion is handled, that the rules and etiquette and decorum are followed. She holds the gavel. But she does not do it alone. There are other leaders that help her in her job. One of the unique features that the Massachusetts system has is that there is an acting president if the actual president is not in the chamber. What the Senate does is they recognize the most senior member of the majority party. And they give them the honorary title President Pro Tempore, which is Latin for basically temporary president. Sorry, I'm seeing if I can get all these people's names. I should have had this all prepared, but I forgot my notes and I'm working off my computer and my computer's not updated. I'm slacking. Massachusetts Senate leadership.
All right, Karen Spilka, I had that right.
All right, the current president pro tempore, not that you're going to need to remember these people's names, is William Brownsberger. He represents Suffolk in Norfolk County. Of course, I can't get any bio, so I have no idea how long he's been in there, but he is the Democrat senator that has the most years. There is also a recognition of the party. There is a majority leader. The current majority leader is Cynthia Stone Cream, who represents Norfolk and Middlesex counties. You don't need to remember the people, but you can remember their jobs. The job of the majority leader is to keep the majority party in line. If it's something that the Democrats want, it's Senator Cream's job to make sure all the Democrats vote for it. So, how do you do it? Well, there's a lot of quid pro quo. They play political games. So, if there's a senator that maybe doesn't want to vote for a bill, they do funny things, like they calculate the votes they need. So, if, say, there's a senator in a district where maybe there's a Republican challenger, and the Republican challenger seems to be very popular because of some of the issues that that Republican supports. Well, if that senator in that district could gain votes by not voting for a bill, the majority leader will let that person off so long as they get the votes to pass the bill. Or maybe they'll put extra spending perks. Again, we're going to talk about it. It's called pork. So they'll put extra money in the legislation that that senator can bring back and say, hey, look at me. You know, I'm bringing money back to the district. It's all games. It's all smoke and mirrors. But ultimately, it's the majority leader that holds the majority party in check. Oh, and guess what? The Republicans have a leadership leader, too. That individual is recognized as the minority leader. Why? Well, because, again, it's five. You're definitely in the majority if there's only five members of your team. The majority leader for at least the last 20 years is a guy by the name of Bruce Tarr. Now, there are other officers, but we're not going to worry about the other officers. These are the big ones. So, you have the leader in the chamber. You have someone that will act as the leader if the leader's not present. Then you have the party leadership. Questions? All right. On the House side, the House leader, as we know, is called the Speaker. The current Speaker is Ronald Mariano, is a Democrat from Quincy.
He has been there for many, many, many years.
But like the Senate, what happens if Speaker Mariano is not present? Well, they give that honorary title to the most tenured member of the majority party. The current Speaker pro tempore is Kate Hogan, Democrat from Stowe. And like on the Senate side, they have a party leader, majority leader, a guy by the name of Michael Moran, Democrat from Brighton. And there's also a minority leader who leads the Republican team, and that's Bradley Jones Jr. of North Reading. Same basic responsibilities as their Senate counterparts. Questions? Now, one of the most important things that each chamber does after they elect their officers at the beginning of their term is to determine the rules by which the chambers are going to operate. Now, in most terms, the Senate and the House simply renews the set of operating rules that they used the previous term. It's very rare that the rules get changed or modified or updated. But every now and then, you know, tweaks do occur. Now, these rules only apply to their chambers. So the House doesn't have the power to tell the Senate what to do. The Senate doesn't have the power to tell the House what to do. But there are a certain area of the rules that define how the chambers interact. Again, as we're going to see, most of the committees are joint committees. So if you're going to have representatives and senators working together, well, how do you do that? It's all laid out. It's kind of like an SOP. I don't know if you ever heard that expression before. Standard operating procedures. Now, the rules themselves are pretty mundane. For instance, there's a rule that defines the hours that the chamber is going to work. I think the legislative day begins at 10 a.m. And under the rules for both chambers, they do not operate after 10 p.m. unless a special session is called for. Typically, when it's budget time and they're trying to finalize the budget, sometimes they work overnight. There's also, for example, rules that say if the chamber is in session, no selfies, no cameras, no pictures from the floor. Interestingly enough, in the House, there is a rule that allows for video coverage, but only during debates. And it's usually broadcast on Channel 2, PBS, WGBH. But when they vote under the House rules, the audio gets cut off. So if they do contain the still show the picture, you can't hear what they're saying to one another. Because again, they're doing that quid pro quo. Hey, look, if you vote for the bill, next time we'll add this to your, we'll add an amendment and we'll get you this. All of the shenanigans that happen. Questions? Now, by the way, if a member is caught violating any of the rules, we know the Constitution says each chamber has the party to review the behavior of its members. There was a situation about 15 years ago, at this point maybe 20. I don't know, when you get older, like, time just doesn't quite mean the same. But it's been a while. There was a Worcester representative, he was a Democrat, can't remember his name, but he was misusing the computers in the House. He was doing some type of Ponzi scheme through the House computer, and he got caught. Well, ultimately, he ended up getting punished, and he resigned in embarrassment. Well, the House rules basically said if you're going to use the House computers, you're only allowed to use them for House business. Not Ponzi schemes. Questions? All right. Most of what they do is in committees. Again, we know they have hearings. They're required to engage in oversight. In the Massachusetts General Court has a very interesting committee system. And again, you can go on the Massachusetts... What's the website? It's not Massachusetts. Well, you could find it through mass.gov. But the Massachusetts legislature has their own. I think it's malegislature.gov. And on there somewhere you can find the area of committees. And you can see the names of every single committee that's currently operating. There are four broad types of committees. Four broad types. The most important ones are referred to as standing committees. In Massachusetts, they're called standing committees because they're permanent committees. They have been in existence for several terms and continue to remain in operation. At last count, I think there's about 50 committees, standing committees. So obviously I don't want you to remember them all. And each committee is in charge of some certain subject. So like there's a committee on education, there's a committee on housing, there's a committee on infrastructure. But there are four committees that I want you to know, and I've already talked about three of them. Bills in the third reading. There's a House version, there's a Senate version. If you recall from how a bill becomes a law, this is the committee that does the final reading of every single bill. They check the grammar. They check the spelling. They check the constitutionality. Make sure everything lines up with other laws. This is the committee that essentially makes the final version that gets the final vote in its respective chamber. We've talked about it. I don't think I need to kill it anymore. Ethics Committee. This is a very, very important one. Because this may be a shock to some of you. You know, you're young. You know, you haven't experienced much in life. But people suck. People are conniving, manipulative, self-centered, corrupt. If, oh, by the way, this also includes our elected officials. Oh, I thought we elected saints. No, we actually don't. If a member is caught engaging in scandalous, shocking, even illegal activity, their name is sent to the Ethics Committee. And it's the Ethics Committee that does the investigation. The Ethics Committee has the power to consider all violations. Violations of rules, violations of conduct, violations of the law. And it's the Ethics Committee that can make recommendations of punishment for the members. And there are all different types of punishments that could occur, ranging from getting taken off of committees. If a member serves on a committee, they get extra money. They get stipends. They get $3,000, $4,000, $7,000 extra dollars on their paycheck. And the more committees on, the more stipends they get. Well, if there's a member misbehaving and they get taken off all their committees, they're going to lose all that stipends. Members could get fined. Members could get censured. Anyone know what a censure is? A censure is when the body makes a statement disapproving of an action by the member. We actually did that years ago. There was a guy that was on the board. He got on around the same time I did. And I can't laugh because in all seriousness, he did have a drinking problem. He was a very violent alcoholic. And he got himself into a little trouble in another state. And our board actually voted to censure him. So we basically made a public statement we don't approve of his behavior. But before we broadcast it, he resigned. So when he resigned, we decided not to make it public. So it's a condemnation. By the way, the most significant penalty that ethics can recommend, removal of the member. Both the House and the Senate has the power to vote out members of their chamber, even if elected by the people. There was the most recent one, actually was the city, it was a councilor. There was a member of the Boston City Councilor. She got busted taking bribes when the FBI did a sting, and they actually have like secret camera footage of her taking a big wad of cash and stuffing it like into her bra. It was very embarrassing. But the city council voted to
Well, I mean, it makes sense. Don't we want our lawmakers acting in a legal way? Rules committee.
We talked about the rules committee already on how a bill becomes a law. Every single bill before it starts the long process begins at the rules committee.
The rules committee is the committee that's charged with scheduling every single bill. They also make up the rules on which committees it's supposed to go to. It makes the rules on the time period, when it's going to be subject to committee review, when is the marked up version supposed to be presented, when is it going to go to the floor. All of it. Excuse me. All of the procedures and so forth. And the last one, ways and means.
Anything dealing with money goes to the Ways and Means.
Now, FYI, because the Ways and Means Committee is so important, the Senate President and the Speaker serves as the chair.
Woman and chairman, because Senate President's a woman, House Speaker is a man, they serve as the chairs for their respective Ways and Means Committees.
So what does this mean? No money is spent unless the President or the Speaker wants it to be spent. Questions? By the way, it's the leaders who name the committee members.
So it's the Senate President that puts people on the Senate committees. It's the House Speaker that puts people on the House committees.
And generally what they do is they do it in proportion to the partisan makeup of their chamber.
So I'm going to use the Senate easier because I know there's five members. So that means 1/8 of the chamber is Republican, 7/8 are Democrat. So that means on every single Senate chamber, 7/8 are held by Democrats and 1/8 are held by Republicans. which pretty much means that every single Republican senator is on multiple committees.
The funny thing was, is there was one point where there were only three Republican senators. That must have been busy. All right, questions. All right.
Now, most of the standing committees are joint standing committees. As we said, going back in history, back to the
19th century, it was like the 1850s or 60s,
the general court decided rather than having two committees operating at the same bill at different times, it would be quicker to just have them work together.
So, as I said, when I went before the general court to push for my bill, my law, it's a law now because it was passed, I went before a joint committee. There are, I think, approximately 30 joint standing committees. Now, what they do is all of the joint standing committees have 17 members plus a chairperson.
17 members, actually it's two chairs, because there's a chair on the House and there's a chair on the Senate.
So it actually makes it 19. Six senators, 11 reps, plus one officer from each chamber.
Sometimes, Ways and Means, they each have their own. That's not technically a joint standing committee. But if there's a big spending bill coming down the pipeline, sometimes the Ways and Means Committee will meet jointly. They're not a joint standing committee. A joint standing committee means they always operate together. But they'll have a joint session. So they will work together collaboratively.
And as far as the Rules Committee, same thing. The Rules Committee are not joint standing committees, but sometimes they may work jointly just to kind of push bills through. FYI.
Hearings that are open to the public are always the joint standing committees. And there's no rule that joint standing committee hearings have to be in the general court. Every now and then, the committee will travel around the state and they'll have what they call listening sessions. And there could be one at the college. You know, they don't have to go into a government building. They could go to town hall. They could go to a school. They could go to a church. On pieces of legislation that are controversial or significant, they will go around the state. But of course, while the intent is to make government more accessible, how many of you... Like, there was a very important meeting that took place at Lawrence High School on Monday. It had to do with funding for public education. How many of you would have been able to drive up to Lawrence High School at 10 a.m. on a Monday morning? Obviously, when they do these listening sessions, they don't make them convenient for most people who work. At least they're, you know, trying to get out there.
All right. Not to get bogged down in the weeds, because I want to finish early. Conference committees. Talked about conference committees.
Conference committees is the final committee in the legislative process. When the bill passes the House, and a bill passes the Senate, the House version, the Senate version has to be reconciled. They have to be blended together. They must be identical. The two must become one. That is the job of the conference committee.
There is a conference committee for every piece of legislation. These temporary bodies consist of 6 members, 3 from each chamber,
and they sit only so long as they need to sit to do the reconciliation, to blend the laws together. Meaning, most conference committees meet for a day, maybe 2.
They're relatively quick. Typically, new elected members to the general court kind of get their first committee work experience serving on the conference committees, because there's constant opportunities for members to sit in and get involved. All right, the last type of committee are special committees. Special committees are only created when there is a special topic that needs to be considered. So, I'll give you an example. There is currently a special committee operating in the general court that's looking at all of the issues involved in what potentially is going to be the construction of a new bridge to get onto Cape Cod. The Sagamore Bridge, the Bourne Bridge, were both built in 1932, are incapable of handling all the Cape traffic. So if any of you have ever been crazy enough to try to go to Cape Cod in June on a Friday at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you know you're going to be stuck in traffic probably for 3 or 4 hours just to get over the bridge. Why? Because if you've ever driven over the bridge, you know there are barely 4 lanes, 2 and 2. Whereas there's 3 lanes of traffic that funnels down to the bridge. So, they are soliciting money from the federal government. At some point in your lifetimes, I don't know if I'll be alive long enough this and hear about this for a long time, at some point there's going to be a new bridge. But think about what that's going to take. They're going to need to do takings. They're going to need to take the land all around where the new bridge is going to go. People are going to lose their homes. There are going to be businesses that are going to be lost. What's the environmental impact? Is there going to be enough money to maintain the bridge? All these things. Well, there's a special committee that is in session. I mean, they may not be meeting today, but is in operation, and their job is to basically get ready for it. That committee will last so long as it takes until the bridge is up and running. And then once the matter is dealt with, the committee will adjourn. Questions? And again, it's split. Split membership based on partisanship. All right, a couple of the last little things to throw out there that I want you to remember. I've mentioned it many times.
Our legislature today, as are all the legislatures across the country, they are all partisan in nature, meaning membership, activity, committee activity, leadership, it's all controlled by the political parties. As you know, there are 2 dominant political parties in our country. There are the Democrats and the Republicans. And unfortunately, and again, it's gotten really bad in my life. You know, there was a point in my lifetime, when the D's and the R's used to work together, if it was something that, like, it seemed like a lot of people wanted. You know, the whole reaching across the aisle, I don't know if you've heard that expression before, wasn't unique, it wasn't rare, it happened all the time. It was very common for Republicans to sign on to Democrat bills, or Democrats to sign on to Republican bills. But unfortunately, really beginning in the late 80s, the Democrats really entrenched themselves and the Republicans countered. Now everything's tit for tat. And it's just awful. It's so depressing. And the same is true in Massachusetts. But in Massachusetts, we're such a lopsided, one-party state, pretty much the Democrats can do whatever they want, whenever they want. And the same is true in Republican states, like Utah. Utah is controlled by Republicans, and I think even more so than the Democrats control Massachusetts. Now, obviously, if you are a team player, and all you do is think about Team D and Team R, yay, go team. But the reality is the teams only care about themselves. So it would be nice if they could act like adults and work together. That's one of the reasons why I like being on the local government. Because when we start talking about town and city governments, it's not party. I don't run as Republican. My colleagues don't run as Democrats. We just run as individuals. And as a result, you never hear us talking about Democrat or Republican things. It's always about, you know, what's good for the people of Suffolk. Not same, the same is not true under the Golden Dome. All right, so what do the parties do? Well, obviously the parties elect the officers. The parties are able to get the rules that they want. The parties control the committees. You know, the last thing that I'm going to mention is, of course, you know, in our state, the Democrats have so much control. It's a veto-proof majority. Compensation. Compensation. Members of our legislature get paid almost as much as members of the United States Congress. The last time I checked, I think the base salary is like $120,000 a year. And as I said, you get extra stipends for every single committee that you serve on. You also get stipends if you hold a leadership position. I think as a result, again, I'm just rough estimates because I did look it up last semester. I think President Spilka, I think she makes close to $240,000 a year for being Senate President. And Mariano, Speaker Mariano, he makes close to $270,000. So it's the same amount of money. FYI, you may have a chance to vote on a ballot question if they don't tank it, they're trying to, because there was a group of citizens that got angry and put a petition forward, and it went through all the process, they got enough signatures, that on the ballot in November, there was a group that wants to eliminate all of those extra stipends. Because, you know, if you're going to go represent the people, you should not be there for the money. You know, if you are elected to three terms, and you're making $200,000 a year. By the way, you don't have to pay for parking. You don't have to pay for tolls. You get, like, free health care, like the best health care that's out there. You know, if you get into the legislature and you're there long enough, you could become a millionaire. You know, that's not the intent. Heck, if you are in Congress, you have the ability to have multi-millions of dollars. So there is efforts, there are groups, citizens groups in Massachusetts that are concerned with the levels of compensation. So hopefully we're going to get some reform on it.
It would be nice. All right, we did that. We know how a bill becomes a law. Last little bit of information is just a simple recognition that, the legislatures themselves don't really do all the work. Obviously, there is a group of individuals that work for, are under the Golden Dome, that work on Beacon Hill. Many of the staffers are career employees. They have jobs, responsibilities to the building, not the parties, not the individual representatives or senators. There are many people that work the building that are part of the support staff. There are
secretaries now? What's the politically correct word for secretaries? Admins? I think they're called admins. Administrative assistants?
Administrative professional, whatever
the new label is. There's custodians, there's maintenance guys, there's security. If you ever go, by the way, you do have the ability to visit the State House. It's open Monday to Friday. Anyone can walk in. The only catch is you're just going to go through security. You're going to go through a metal detector. And then you're allowed to just walk around. It's really cool. Some of the most important people that work in that building are the clerks. The ones that hold all of the documentation. All of the bills, all of the reports, everything is filed. There are multiple offices that handle all of the aspects of the filing of the bills, keeps track of all the activities. Amongst the clerks, the two most important are the head clerks. There is a head clerk that serves the House. There is a head clerk that serves the Senate. And the two guys that are currently the clerks, the guy that's been there the longest has been working in that building for almost 60 years. Started as a teenager. He worked his way up. And he got recognized as being the head clerk for the Senate.
Pretty cool. He's from Milford. Can't remember his name. I met him once. Really nice guy. The funny thing is, and by the way, this is true in City Hall or Town Hall.
Never mind the elected officials. If you really want to know the people that operate your town, go talk to the people that work in Town Hall. They're all good people. Now, every single member of the legislature has aides.
They have people that have full-time jobs that are allowed to work directly for that legislator, and they get a paid salary.
Every rep and senator is allowed to have at least one, but the more time you serve, the more committees you serve on, you are allowed to get extras. So my senator, Senator Ryan Fatman, has three paid aides that work in his office, and then he has other aides that are paid by his campaign. I am very proud to say that my nephew is currently working as one of the aides for Senator Fatman. So if you ever call the office Monday to Friday and you have an issue, and if Fatman is your senator, chances are it's going to be my nephew that's going to answer the phone.
Very proud of him. Very proud. There is also the Legislative Service Bureau.
These are staffers that are not assigned necessarily to either chamber, but they may be assigned to individual joint standing committees. You know, these are the ones that basically do all the running. So they don't work for the individual members, but rather they're the ones to make sure that the committees are able to operate properly.
So they produce the lists of all the committees, hearings scheduled for that day. They post where in the building they're going to operate. They're the ones making sure that all the laws are updated. Work hard.
Each chamber also has a sergeant at arms. At the beginning of every single session, it is the sergeant at arms who declares the session open. The primary task of the sergeant at arms is to be the keeper of the keys for the chamber. But the sergeant at arms is also supposed to be there to maintain the leader's ability to control the chamber. So if the house is debating and there's a member that's getting out of hand, speaking out of turn, violating the rules of decorum, the speaker can request the sergeant at arms escort that member out of the chamber. If the chamber is open for public viewing and there is a gallery, a viewing gallery, in the house chamber, there's not really one in the Senate. The Senate chamber is really tight. But there is a big viewing chamber in the house. If someone's in the audience and they start taking pictures, you know, when they're debating a bill, Sergeant Knox has the power to remove it.
But the most famous duty of the Sergeant at Arms, if you've ever watched the governor's State of the State address, typically it is the Sergeant at Arms for the House that escorts the governor in. The Sergeant at Arms declares that the governor's in the chamber and walks her up to the podium. I'm just going to throw these up.
Two other minor departments that work under the Golden Dome. There's the data processing center. Obviously now everything's electronic. They have their own IT division. It's called data processing. And last but not least, there is the Legislative Post Audit Bureau. Now, interestingly enough, the laws of Massachusetts, the legislature is supposed to audit itself. We know what auditing. Does anyone not know what an audit is? Everyone knows what an audit is. All right, then I won't talk about it then. But the legislature is supposed to audit itself, and it's supposed to make public the audit. Well, the problem is for the last 20 years, our legislature has not. They claim they've done an audit, but they haven't made it public. So that's one of the reasons why the state auditor put the ballot question on our ballot last election, in which the people voted 72% to give the state auditor the authority to audit the legislature. Because if you don't make public all of the money coming in, identify everywhere it's going out, how do we know that our legislature is spending money in accordance to the laws of Massachusetts? How do we know they're not giving kickbacks to their buddies? We don't know. I can tell you this much. When President Joe Biden opened up the borders and allowed millions of people to come across illegally, there were planes that landed in Boston in the middle of the night. They picked up a whole bunch of illegals in Mexico. They didn't cross the border, put them on planes, flew them into Boston, and then in the middle of the day on a Friday afternoon, put them in Ubers and taxis and spread them out throughout Massachusetts. Who paid for all of that? Where did the money come from? Well, I can tell you, we ended up with about 130 in Sutton, mostly from, I think they were mostly from Haiti, if I remember correctly. And they ended up at the Red Roof Inn on 146, which is a shithole. When it was Pleasant Valley Motor Lodge?
Right, because of the country club, and it was like, oh!
Exactly. But the current owner is working on it, and he just doesn't have much money. So hopefully it will at least not be, ugh. But anyways, all of the people that were in Red Roof got kicked out. Didn't even get a day's notice. And that was very significant because we, a lot of the charitable groups in town, gives our town nurse money from collections that we have. And we actually had two homeless families that the Dudley Gendron and the Lions and some of the other groups were actually paying for them not to be homeless. A wife with young kids, they got kicked out. Whole place was filled with all these legals. We don't know exactly how much money the owners of the Red Roof got paid, but from what we understand, it was nearly triple the rate that they normally charge. And they were there for several months. We didn't have the ability to give food for them. We didn't have it in our budget. So the state gave them basically like EBT cards. The state provided transportation. State even bought some of them cars because, you know, Massachusetts passed a law that illegals can get driver's license. There was thousands, tens of thousands, possibly hundreds of thousands of dollars that were pumped into these people that were dropped in Massachusetts, in Sutton, Massachusetts. Well, we kept complaining because they were walking across 146 to go to the grocery store. Like 146, that's a highway. There's no sidewalks, there's no crossing lights. And they were running, they're taking their lives at risk to go to the grocery store, Market 32, on the other side of the highway. We had at least a dozen almost accidents. So finally, we convinced the state, if you leave them there, someone's going to die and it's not going to be our responsibility. So they relocated them. Just as quickly as they arrived, they were all gone. Don't know where they went, but they were no longer at the Red Roof. Where did that money come from? Who paid for all this stuff? I can tell you this much. State budget this coming year is going to be upwards of $63 billion. If you go back 15 years, the state budget was about $30 billion. Why is our state budget more than double in 15 years? State also has a deficit of $128 billion. Where'd all that money go? It's our money. We pay our taxes for that. Where's it going? Don't know. So that's why the audit is a big thing. Because the funny thing is, it's not partisan. Our auditor is Democrat. It's not a Democrat versus Republican thing. It's just the expectation that if our legislature is going to spend our money, we the people have a right to know what they're spending it on. Because what happens if we don't like what they're spending it on? What can we do? What does our Constitution tell us? We have a duty to do. Can we go assassinate them? Remove them. We can unelect them. Send them home. All right, that's a tangent, but it's very important. I just want to make you aware of certain issues. All right, so I'm done for exam two. Obviously, we don't have school next week. I would like to have you take the second exam between now and Sunday. Some of you missed classes.
I will make sure that the last two recordings are online, so you can go back and listen to it. I would like to have you take it on Sunday again. If I do that, would that be a problem? So I'll do the same thing. It will be online. It will open up at 8 a.m. You'll have all day to do it. Some of you have had technology upgrades, so it won't be an issue this time. I will send a reminder out, make sure you take care of it. If I did collect your homework, the homeworks, there will be essay questions that involve those homeworks. If you did submit them, you do not have to answer those questions. I will give you the full points. If you did not give me them, you're going to have to, because if you don't put anything down, you'll get zeros on that. There will be the same about amount of multiple choice questions. There will be two essays. Maximum score is 110 points. The other thing I want to throw out there, and I did mention at the end of last class, you've got a paper due that's due at the end of the semester. If you're not doing much over the week, now might be a good time to bang it out. It should not take you that long. But of course, if you're going to get a head start on it, make sure you go back to proflamatic.com, read the requirements of the assignment. And I really mean this truthfully. You do not have to be a strong writer to get a good grade on this. All you need to do is follow directions. And the opposite is true. You could be the greatest writer in the world, but if you don't follow directions, you'll fail easy. So before you do any type of submission, review it. And of course, as always, if you have any questions, send me an email. All right? I will. My week actually doesn't look crazy next week, which is nice. So I'm going to do a lot of catching up and planning ahead for the rest of the semester. So if you send me an email, I should be able to get back to you quicker than I have been the last couple of weeks. Any other questions now? All right. Yeah. I did. You sent it at like 8:43. And you sent it twice. I got a chuckle out of that. Anything else? Dismissed!
Thank you.
No, thank you.